All right, children. I'll be like a Baptist preacher. I'm going to get back here amongst y'all. Let's go. Hey. Cool it. We already lost 5 minutes. My whole goal was to get to 12:30 with at least half of y'all still awake. So we got to do something. Let's. How many of y'all have been through the ventilation stuff with me in the past? Half maybe. Okay, well that's pretty good. Mechanical ventilators are, for those of you who've been on our service and worked through reading EKGs, you know I've told you that reading EKGs is tremendously more difficult than managing a mechanical ventilator. But having said that, I will admit that there is something particularly intimidating about a ventilator, usually because the situation where you're having to use one is right on the heels of having had somebody stop breathing in front of you, and you had to struggle to try to get an airway in them, which is very seldom ever easy. They never go completely smoothly, it seems. And so you're already kind of tense and anxious when you get to that point. And suddenly you've got to think, now, what do I do with this thing? Well, I want you to remember the basics, not all the difficulties you had when you were actually seeing a patient on a ventilator. And what are those basics? Well, they really are pretty simple. For at least a volume AC setup, there are really only 5 major variables that you have to memorize. Now, even an internist can memorize 5 details. So none of you have any excuse. So what are those 5 details? What are the 5 things that you have to set on every mechanical ventilator that you're going to set up? Well, they are the rate. And so I have this simple, like Bill O'Reilly, I'm simple-minded. And so I try to make everything, no matter how complicated it is, I try to distill it down to its common denominator and make it something that's easy for me to remember. So what is an easy way for me to remember what to set the rate on for all mechanical ventilators that I'm going to set up for the next 40 years? 15. Period. You don't need to remember anything else. For all time, all patients, all sizes, well, except for children, you can use a rate of 15 for everybody. Now, is 15 enough to adequately oxygenate everybody with respiratory failure? No, obviously it's not. So why do we set 15? Well, 15 is enough to keep the person alive until you can figure out why they're only breathing 15 times per minute. Okay? So it's not intended to be an adequate level of ventilation. It's intended to be just simply a place to start that gives you a base below which you don't really want to go. All right? So what rate do most people breathe who have mechanical ventilator type respiratory failure? Well, they're going to be on up in the mid to high 20s typically. They're going to be in the 27, 28, 29 breaths per minute or more. And so what you want to do is to be able to allow that person to decide how fast can they breathe or should they breathe, and let them determine what the rate is, because they're going to be able to guess at their comfort level much easier than you will be able to. In the 15 or so years of my practice, before somebody really invented the best part of volume ventilation, and what is that? What's the best invention to come along in volume ventilation in the past 40 years? It wasn't when we went from negative pressure ventilation to positive pressure ventilation. It was when they invented volume AC. Volume AC basically is what we use today to start ventilation on anybody with respiratory failure. But SIMV was the mode, in fact, IMV was the mode that we used prior to that. And when you set someone up on SIMV, you, the physician, has to guess how fast that person is going to want to breathe. And if you guess wrong, if you turn it too high, you overventilate them. If you turn it too low, they're kicking and sputtering and bucking the ventilator and giving you fits. So it actually turns out not to be easy to do. And volume AC just simply takes that problem and eliminates it. It allows that person to pull a negative pressure in the line. And when they do that, it triggers a breath. And that's called a flow trigger. That's that second little number from the right-hand side on the bottom of the graph on the machine. When you set the flow trigger at 1 liter per minute, all that person has to do is go just the least little breath, and it'll trigger the machine to give that person a full breath. And in doing so, the beauty of volume AC is that it allows the person, the patient, to determine the rate instead of you having to try to guess at it with no real knowledge of where it should be when you start. All right, so the rate of 15 just simply is meant to be a floor upon which you set the volume AC setting that allows the person to drive the rate. So every time that person pulls a little negative pressure in the line, it's going to give them the full tidal volume of whatever you set. So, rate, 15, everybody, all right? What about the FiO2? Well, it, like the rate, can be set at one number for all comers. And you say, wait a minute, didn't you say something weird about people who have bad COPD and CO2 retention? Yes, I did, but not with respect to volume AC on a mechanical ventilator in somebody who's been intubated. The place where putting a high FiO2 will get you in trouble is when you're using a BiPAP machine and you give them too high an FiO2 and their CO2 retainers and their drive to breathe is hypoxemia, and you fix the hypoxemia, they will quit breathing. So they'll look real good for about 30, 40 minutes, and then they'll quit breathing and turn purple. And then you have to intubate them. And that's the whole purpose of a BiPAP in the first place, is to keep from having to intubate a person. So, but once you've made that decision to intubate the person, then it simply doesn't matter what the FiO2 is. Your goal is to get them adequately oxygenated, and it doesn't matter if their drive to breathe is hypoxemia, at least right now. It will become an issue when you start to try to withdraw the person and wean them off the ventilator, but at least for the initial startup, you don't have to worry about that. Everybody gets 100% FiO2 when you first start the mechanical ventilation setup. So, rate of 15, FiO2 of 100%. Now, the tidal volume is the third of these five variables, and the tidal volume is a little trickier than the rate in the FiO2. You can't pick one number for everybody, but it's close. 4, 5, and 6. 400 cc's, 500 cc's, 600 cc's. Little people get 400 cc's, big people get 600 cc's, and everybody else gets 500. Okay? So how do you determine who's big? If you had a young lady, when she graduates from high school, weighed 112 pounds, and 27 years later she weighs 257 pounds, are her lungs any bigger when she weighs 257 pounds? No, in fact, they're probably a little smaller than they were when she was in high school. Certainly has lower capacity for exchanging oxygen. So you can't use body weight. You have to use lean body weight. That requires a calculator so you can calculate the lean body weight, right? No, you know that's too complicated for an internist. So how do we decide? Well, it turns out there is a common denominator that is in every room that will tell you precisely how big that person is. It's called a bed. It's 6 feet long, all of them. So if you look at the person lying in the bed and there's a foot between their feet, if there's a foot between their feet and the end of the bed and another foot between the top of their head and the end of the bed, those are little people. if there is touching, their feet are touching the end of the bed and their head's hanging off at the other end, those are big people. They get 600 cc's. And everybody else in between, whether their feet's all the way at the end, their head's not quite all the way to the top, you know, you just kind of glance at them. You get a pretty quick feel for how to determine that 400, 500, 600 cc tidal volume. How crucial is it that you get that number right on the first try? Well, the first 15 years I was in practice, those numbers were 300, were 500, 700, 900. It ain't real critical. Okay, so if you guess wrong, don't sweat it. But if you guess wrong, there is actually a very quick, easy way you can figure out if you guessed wrong based upon just looking at how big the person looks against their bed size. What is that detail? Thank you. Peak pressure. In other words, when you push that breath into their chest cavity, it should generate a pressure in the chest cavity, right? So it's going to go up and down every time. Well, what peak pressure would be about the right amount of pressure, regardless of the body size, for every person to be adequately oxygenated? Well, it turns out that for people with respiratory failure, there is a pretty reliable range for that pressure that will then indirectly tell you whether you got the right tidal volume when you guessed at it. And that pressure is 20 to 30. 20 to 30 centimeters of water or millimeters of pressure, they're fairly similar, will then tell you if you guessed right. So if you set the tidal volume at 550, and you watch the ventilator for just a few seconds and it goes 22, 24, 27, 19, 23. Okay? You see that the numbers are in that range of between about 20 and 25, and that's well within the 20 to 30 range. But if you set the tidal volume and the pressures go 13, 11, 19, 12, 16, okay, you got pressures clearly outside that 20 to 30 range, and they will vary a little bit from breath to breath, then you know that you need to turn the tidal volume up a bit, and you just literally stand there beside the machine with one hand on the button, and you just keep increasing the tidal volume or decreasing the tidal volume until you get that pressure to fall in that 20 to 30 range. Okay? So that's how you decide. So far you notice we haven't drawn any blood gases. You don't need a set of blood gases to tell you if you've got the right settings on the ventilator. First, you need to optimize the settings on the ventilator to achieve the numbers I just told you. And then and only then check a set of blood gases. So no need in sticking somebody three times in the process of getting them set up on a ventilator. You don't need that. Your O2 sat is a very accurate number as long as you got a good waveform. If you don't have a good, if your waveform looks like V-fib, don't believe the O2 sat. It's not going to be a believable number. All right? So now we have three of the five main settings on a ventilator: the FiO2, the rate, and the tidal volume. And just as a side note, for those of you who are going to rotate at some point on anesthesia, on the anesthesia service, you're going to notice that those pressures I gave you of 20 to 30 are not right. There's a big difference between people who have stiff lungs with respiratory failure from all the various causes and a perfectly normal person who's just simply being paralyzed and sedated for general anesthesia. Those people will do just fine with pressures at about half of that 20 to 30 range, somewhere in the 12 to 15 millimeters of mercury typically or where they land. So you'll notice that those, and they all use pressure ventilators because the pressure ventilators are little bitty pumps about this big, about the size of the IV pump, whereas the volume ventilators during my era look like refrigerators. I mean, they're humongous beasts, and they cost $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. And these little pressure ventilators cost $1,800. If you go to another country to practice medicine, you'll virtually never see a volume ventilator. They will all be these little pressure ventilators, and they do just as good a job as the volume ventilators, as you will learn later when you rotate with us. Okay, so you got three of the five variables that you want to be able to set. And so when the tech turns to you right after you've gotten a person intubated and says, what ventilator settings do you want? It is those first three numbers that they're asking for. They want to, you know, the other two, they probably never will ask you. You can go in and change the other two for reasons we're about to talk about. But as far as what the tech is going to ask you, those three numbers is just simply what you need to be able to tell them. So right off the top of your head, you should be able to say rate of 15, the FiO2 of 100%, and 450. Just that quick. You should be able to look at the person's body size and guess. Then when they set that up, that takes them about a minute, you go then to the machine and you stand there and watch that pressure tracing. Pressure numbers, as every time the ventilator pushes a breath in, you see what pressure got generated when that volume was pushed in. And then if that's between 20 and 30, you've got the right number. If it's not, increase it or decrease it until you get it in that range. Okay? How many of y'all can do that? Come on, you do better than that. So if y'all are moonlighting, and I recommend you moonlight, I know the ACGME doesn't buy that, but I think it's one of the most important experiences you'll have, you're going to be likely faced with that sooner or later. And if you think you won't, you'll see, and you'll be glad. Even so, God, what did he say those first three numbers were? You'll be trying to remember those numbers. But that'll get you by about 85% of the time for anybody who develops respiratory failure, regardless of the cause. You can adequately oxygenate them with those three numbers set up the way we talked about them without knowing anything else. All right, but that other 15% can be a little vexing sometimes, so let's talk about them. What about the person who you set up those three numbers just like we just said, and you stand there and watch the O2 sat monitor, and it's running 86, 89, 87, 86, and it's staying in that 85 to 90 range, then what is the PO2? Or, ask another way, what is the PO2 in a person who has an O2 sat of 90%? What's the number? 60, exactly. So, if the O2 sat is less than 90, the PO2 is going to be less than 60, and that is not good enough. Their brain will fizzle if you leave the PO2 below 60 for very long. So you got to do something else. So what is the next thing on the ventilator, the fourth of the five settings, that you can set that will get you better oxygenation most of the time? Not everybody at once. PEEP, very good. So what is PEEP? It is positive end expiratory pressure, right? No. It is a misnomer. PEEP is really CPAP, continuous. Not just at the end of the ventilation cycle. It's all the way through the ventilation cycle. It is continuous positive airway pressure. It is CPAP. CPAP and PEEP are identical. They mean exactly the same thing. So when do you set PEEP? When you have a volume AC ventilator set up. When do you set CPAP? When you have a BiPAP machine or a CPAP machine. But they're the same thing. So don't let that confuse you. The nomenclature across these machines changes constantly, but they're still the same five variables. They mean the same thing and they do the same thing. So just when you're trying to learn the inspiratory pressure and expiratory pressure on a BiPAP machine, just remember that the inspiratory pressure is the pressure that was generated when you push the breath in, and the expiratory pressure is PEEP or CPAP. It means That's three names for the same thing. PEEP, CPAP, and expiratory pressure. They all mean exactly the same thing. So when you're trying to set up PEEP, you need to remember that it will almost always get you better oxygenation. Except when. When will PEEP get you in trouble? When the person has obstructive lung disease as a cause for their respiratory failure, COPD or asthma. All right, think about that. If CPAP or PEEP is continuous positive airway pressure and you push the breath in, and the difficulty with people with COPD is getting the breath out, they don't have any trouble pulling it in, then doesn't it make sense that if you're going to add some pressure against their ability to get the breath out, that might be a problem? But don't do that. Like they called me a couple of nights ago with this lady and of a heart rate of 130 and a temperature of 103, and I told them, well, tell her to quit that. No, don't do that. Don't add PEEP in someone who has a bad COPD or asthma. Now, have you frankly, honestly ever seen our pulmonologist put somebody on PEEP who has bad COPD? You know darn well you have. Every one of us have. I've done it. When do we do that? We do that when they also have some water in the lung type respiratory failure. Various and sundry.